You know, look, it's an exciting time to be involved in these metals. I see market tightness in particular for lithium and cobalt, certainly for the next 24 to 30 months.
This is Bill Powers with MiningStockEducation.com, back with another expert interview. This interview, I believe, will be of significant pertinence for investors looking to gain insight and invest ahead of the pack in a growing worldwide trend. My guest today is Chris Berry. Chris is the president of House Mountain Partners, and we'll be discussing his outlook for battery metals amidst the electrical vehicle revolution. I also want to get Chris's thoughts regarding his outlook for vanadium and the vanadium redox battery. Chris is an independent analyst specializing in energy metals, and he has a host of other financial experience. Chris, I'd like to welcome you onto the program.
Thanks, Bill. It's great to be here.
Chris, could you begin by sharing with listeners a little bit about your background, what you do with House Mountain Partners, and how you became to be an independent analyst focusing on battery metals?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, you covered a lot of it, but I'm based here in New York. I've actually been here for about 19 or 20 years now, and I've had various roles all across the capital market spectrum. About 7 years ago, I put together what I wanted to be an independent research platform with a focus on what I called energy metals, those metals used in the generation or storage of energy. And so that would include lithium, cobalt, graphite, copper, and nickel, a lot of the metals and minerals that are really obviously on investor radar today. And so, you know, just to sort of finish up, I mean, I'm an avid reader or perhaps an avid student of economic history and social science. And through all of my studies, I realized that any self-sustaining society is sustained or led by a strong middle class. And so one of the ways to build that middle class is through access to cheap energy. And so I've focused on those metals or minerals that make energy cheap or make it efficient. In terms of, you know, who I do this with, I do a lot of advisory work and consulting for corporations, investment managers, banks, and also other raw material companies all over the world, actually. It's been an interesting couple of years. And so really focusing on these themes that we'll talk about today and then opportunities along the energy supply chain.
Pre-interview, we were having a nice little conversation about the vanadium market. Can you share your thoughts with listeners right now regarding the vanadium market, your outlook, and specific supply and demand issues that are going on?
Yeah, I mean, vanadium has been interesting because it's been probably one of the more bullish markets, if you will, or one of the more exciting places to invest that a lot of people haven't ever really heard of or paid attention to. You know, just by way of background, vanadium is really, and growth in vanadium, I should say, is really dependent on the steel market because about 90% of vanadium that is produced goes directly into the steel market. So, you know, watching growth or contraction overall in the steel market over time, watching those dynamics unfold is really, I think, one of the ways to go to get a sense for where we're going to be in terms of vanadium supply and demand out over the next 3 to 5 years. Vanadium demand overall, because it's really intertwined with the steel market, which is obviously an industrial sort of commodity, a bellwether, you know, it's growing, let's say, 3 to 3.5% per year. So that sort of tracks global GDP. So, you know, growth in vanadium is a little bit less volatile or perhaps less exciting than lithium or cobalt, which are growing a little bit faster now. But nevertheless, I think the vanadium market is one that, you know, your listeners want to be learning as much as they can about because it really does fit into this sort of under this umbrella, I should say, of a new age metal. And one of the things that you find with these technology metals or these new age metals is that scientists are finding unique ways to use them in all sorts of different industries every single day. I've got a Google alert set up for energy technology, and I feel like every week I get a new alert about some breakthrough that makes it really exciting and gives me a pretty positive feel for the metals like vanadium. I would say that, you know, as a word of caution, none of these breakthroughs or these disruptive discoveries happen overnight. They do, you know, tend to take, you know, longer, perhaps a decade or more to really make themselves felt. But, you know, the more educated you are now, I think generally speaking, you know, the better off an investor is going to be. I think one of the reasons why people are so excited or intrigued by vanadium is, of course, the vanadium redox battery, which we can perhaps get into here in a couple of minutes. But right now, that's a very small part of the overall vanadium demand story, but it could, you know, one day be something much more substantial.
I mentioned to you pre-interview that Largo Resources is one of the companies on my watch list, and from July to September, in about an 8 to 9 week period, it quadrupled in price, which then caused me to try to seek out what was going on in the vanadium price, and it was a little frustrating, as I've previously shared, trying to locate the price. What would be your thoughts, or could you share with listeners some advice regarding trying to research these niche metals and try to discover the price and the price trends, because it's not widely reported?
Yeah, that is a real challenge when you, I guess, look at vanadium or lithium or cobalt or any of these, you know, niche metals, as you had mentioned before. There really is no specific price. A lot of these metals are priced based off of what I call relationships between buyers and sellers over handshake agreements. The price can vary based on the grade or the purity of the material, and also the amount of material, typically per ton, that is bought and sold. And so, you know, just in terms of getting your handle, on the vanadium price, outside of subscribing to, you know, a pricing service, your best bet is to try and stay as close as you possibly can to the existing producers of vanadium in terms of press releases or financial disclosure documents. Or also, you know, some of the juniors out there do, you know, a pretty good job, I think, of trying to keep investors clear or focused on what the current price trends are. You know, with just to sort of finish up maybe a little bit on vanadium, it's a little bit challenging, again, because it's really an oligopoly. You have a metal that is both geographically concentrated. I think about 80% of the overall production comes from South Africa, China, and Russia. And, you know, amongst those countries, it's also concentrated based on the number of companies that actually produce vanadium, typically as a byproduct from steel slag. So, you know, looking at those companies in particular, I think is a good place to start in terms of getting an idea or a feel for specific pricing trends.
Vanadium's used to strengthen steel, and another use, as you've mentioned, is the battery. It's used as a battery metal. What are your thoughts regarding the vanadium redox battery and how that factors into an increase in demand for vanadium?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, the real vanadium bulls out there are sort of pinning their hopes on widespread adoption of the vanadium redox battery. And I think, you know, that's certainly not misplaced by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I have, like I said, I've been focused on this niche of these energy metals for the last 7 years. And much of that time has really been spent understanding and learning about different battery chemistries, not just lithium ion, but of course, vanadium redox as well. And so what you come to realize after looking at these markets is that every battery has its own set of advantages and disadvantages. And, you know, lithium ion and certain lithium ion chemistries would be ideal for certain applications like consumer handheld devices or perhaps electric vehicles, whereas vanadium redox battery, based on its specifications, if you will, is really ideal for energy storage. So, you know, again, longer term trend, as you start to see more and more renewable energy deployment, typically solar and wind, you know, it stands to reason that VRBs, based on the fact that they have exceptional cycle life and also really very strong operating characteristics relative to lithium ion, should become more of a factor as renewables become a larger part of the overall energy pie going forward. You know, everybody says, well, what about costs? And that is really, I guess, the reason why lithium ion is on the tip of the tongue, if you will, of every investor these days. You know, lithium ion has been around commercially for at least 30 years. It's, of course, the lightest of all metals, and it has the highest energy density. So those two factors, and also just the track record of safety, generally speaking, are why you're seeing all of these gigafactory scale plants center on lithium ion. And of course, you know, the scale really pushes the cost down. So right now, you know, if lithium ion on the pack level is $250 per kilowatt hour, and, you know, that's a rough estimate. Some will be lower, some will be higher. VRBs are somewhat higher, maybe $300 to $500 a kilowatt hour. And so the bet is that, again, as more renewable deployment takes place around the world, more vanadium redox battery, I guess, scale is added to the overall mix, that will push the price down and then ultimately make VRBs probably cost competitive with lithium ion going forward. So it's really just sort of a matter of time. It's not so much that you know, one technology is absolutely better than the other.
When might we potentially see VRBs installed in electric vehicles?
Well, you probably would never see them in electric vehicles. And I shouldn't say never, but certainly not anytime soon. And that has to do with some of the issues that I mentioned before, really around cost. But also, a vanadium redox battery is quite large. It's the size of a couple of shipping containers. And so, you know, trying to, I guess, minimize that and create the same amount of energy density that you'd find in a lithium ion battery and match all of the benefits of lithium ion is just not worth it right now. So my personal bet is that vanadium redox batteries would never be a focus of or a part of the electric vehicle space. They're really going to stick more towards grid scale and large scale energy storage.
How soon do you see electric vehicles approaching price parity with ICE or in internal combustion engine vehicles?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. And I think that is because so much in this space, the automotive space in particular, actually the whole battery supply chain, so much is happening so much faster than we previously thought. I mean, demand estimates for the metals are being jacked up. EV adoption rates are being jacked up. But, you know, to answer your question specifically, most of the estimates that I have seen with respect to parity believe that we're going to be there on an unsubsidized basis between sort of 2022 and 2023. And that has everything to do with, I guess, different incentives in different countries, you know, China versus the EU versus the United States, other parts of the world. And so I think a big part of pushing those costs down is, of course, successful build out of all of this gigafactory scale lithium ion production. By my numbers, you're going to have at least 265, maybe closer to 300 gigawatt hours of capacity by 2020 or 2023. And of course, scale plus small incremental, you know, technological leaps in terms of energy density overall help to lower the cost of the EV relative to the internal combustion engine. So, you know, that my sense is that the build out of the scale by 2022 or 2023 gets us to that magical $125 or so, maybe $100 a kilowatt hour, which is thought to be the parity level.
At that time, what percentage of cars on the road do you think would be electric?
Well, you know, again, this is another great question because depending upon who you speak with, there are numbers that are all over the map. I'm actually pretty conservative. My own numbers estimate, and this is actually 2025, but I can work backwards. I think you probably have an EV penetration rate of 6 to 7% by 2025. So let's say that by 2022, it's, you know, half of that, maybe 3 or 4%. A lot of people think that's too low. I mean, I've seen, you know, research from banks and think tanks that have it as high as 12 to 15%. I just don't think it can be that high. And I think that's based on potential raw material constraints. So with lithium and cobalt and some of these other, you know, metals and raw materials as well. So anyway, a 6% EV penetration rate by 2025 means you've got 6 or 7 million EVs on the road every year, which is still a huge leap from where we are today. So that's still very positive. And I think it's realistic. I think, you know, just to add to that, you have a situation where you've got a number of countries in Europe, like the Netherlands, Germany, I believe France, the UK, have all voiced support for the ban of sales of the internal combustion engine. Now, it's just talk at this point in time, but the fact that, you know, there's seemingly, you know, a head of steam to do something like that, whether or not it's by 2025, 2030, or 2040, is very positive, because what that's going to do is it's going to force all of the OEMs to accelerate the shift in their supply chains. And of course, you know, the one elephant in the room that I have not yet discussed is China. And China has yet not come out and publicly said anything yet, but many sort of industry watchers believe that any kind of a, you know, an announcement in China of a ban on internal combustion engines, meaning going all electric, would completely revamp, you know, all of the demand estimates. It would really supercharge it. And even what you're seeing now is the Chinese have said, well, we want to have 7 million electric vehicles on Chinese roads by, you know, the early 2020s. And so that's obviously a lot more than just my specific estimates. But, you know, a lot can happen between now and then. So any way you look at it, it's very, very positive for electric vehicles. And by extension, it's very, very positive for the metals that are used in the batteries, because you're not going to electrify your economy without a secure supply of these raw materials.
What are your general thoughts about the future profitability of electrical vehicle manufacturers?
Well, again, I think a lot of that depends on, you know, what we see in terms of leaps around battery technology. Right now, you know, the only pure EV player out there in the market is, of course, Tesla. And, you know, they've lost and burned through a large amount of money. And it looks like as they, you know, try and build out their charging infrastructure and the gigafactory and perhaps multiple gigafactories, that they'll be burning through even more cash as they try and ramp up Model 3 sales. So, you know, I'm not sure if they're necessarily the best proxy when you then maybe turn the table a little bit and look at the legacy OEMs, Ford, General Motors, some of the European guys, Daimler and BMW. I mean, they're all going to lose money on electric vehicles at the start. The question is, can they scale it up, and can they encourage consumers to make the switch from traditional internal combustion engines to full EVs? And that has a lot to do with reliability and just the general feel of the car. You know, my sense is that a lot of people just haven't driven an EV yet. I have, and it's an amazing sort of shift. I mean, you can sort of see how it can happen. But I think, you know, the more people that get behind the wheel of an electric vehicle, that's really going to potentially accelerate the tipping point, and hopefully, you know, not erode the profitability of legacy automotive manufacturers.
So do you see, with these battery metals, lithium, cobalt, graphite, nickel, copper, do you see the demand coming from the battery applications sufficient enough to keep these metals in a bull market for some years to come?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, what you want to do as an investor is you want to look at each metal individually. And, you know, what I do is I break down, you know, you sort of look at it as a pie chart, and you say, okay, well, based on, for example, lithium today, when you look at it in terms of lithium carbonate equivalent units, because you have a number of different lithium products that are produced and sold, it's about a 200,000 ton per year market. And I'll say about 40% of that goes into the battery business. Okay. I think that by 2025, lithium will be a 600,000 ton a year market. So I think it's going to triple in the next 8 years. And I think 2/3 of that approximately will be spoken for, if you will, by the battery business. So when you look at these metals, when you look at lithium and when you look at cobalt, they are going to be driven by the battery business, period. End of story. Right now, you know, on the cobalt side, again, it's another small market. It's about 105,000 tons in size. I think that by 2025, that will grow by about 60%, again, driven by the battery business. And, you know, the challenge there is that you're looking at a situation where by 2025 in cobalt, just the battery sector could consume all of global cobalt production today. Okay, and so obviously you need to see either a wave of supply come on stream quickly, or you need to see recycling, or you need to see some sort of a technological leap, which is very difficult to forecast. So, you know, look, it's an exciting time to be involved in these metals. I see market tightness in particular for lithium and cobalt, certainly for the next, 24 to 30 months. And that has everything to do with just my own sort of knowledge of how long it takes to bring mining projects on stream and try and match supply and demand. So I see market tightness and a really interesting, battery metals markets for the next couple of years at least until the dust settles.
Chris, are there any concluding thoughts you'd like to share with the listening investors regarding investing in these metals?
Well, I think one of the things that, again, just in terms of how I tend to look at the markets and what I think is important as an investor, yes, certainly having a world-class asset in a reliable geopolitical jurisdiction is important, but when you start really focusing in on lithium and cobalt and vanadium and these other niche metals, what really matters is two things, in my opinion. Number one is management expertise and the ability to sort of navigate the financial markets, if you will. So a management team that is going to succeed in this energy metals market has been there before, if you will. In other words, they're not just into the lithium space or not just into the vanadium space. They understand the technical challenges that are involved in building a vanadium project, for example. A lot of people, just focusing on lithium for a second, a lot of people don't realize that lithium is really a specialty chemical. It's not a commodity, and you could perhaps make the case for some of the vanadium out there that is produced as well. So, I guess the parting advice would be really focus on the management, really make sure they understand the technical and the financial challenges of building one of these projects to feed this energy metal supply chain.
Chris, I've learned a lot today and I benefited from it, and I know our listeners have as well. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.